Today's episode of the Sidious Mag Podcast on the Sidious Mag Podcast Network is presented by Tracksmith. Tracksmith is a big supporter of Sidious Mag. They've sponsored races when we did the Trials of Miles circuit back in the spring. They backed the podcast during our daily show at the Olympic Trials in the summer. And they outfitted me and some friends when I raced Malcolm Gladwell in a mile back in May. We unfortunately don't talk about how that race ended for me. The Boston-based Running Grand is a company that crafts performance apparel for training, racing, and rest days. They just got mentioned on Fast Company's list of 2021 brands that matter, so congrats to them. From the mountains to cross-country courses and the roads, Tracksmith's newest releases celebrate fall running in all its varieties. Shop the latest collection of running essentials and check out the Tracksmith Journal for some inspiration and stories from the athletes, traditions, and events that make running the greatest sport in the world. If you saw me at the New York City Marathon, I was rocking their classic black Van Cortlandt singlet with a little Sidious Mag touch to it. If you're in the city, you've only got a couple more weekends to hit their pop-up at 1928 Broadway. It's open for the rest of November on weekends. For my loyal listeners, Tracksmith is offering up 15% off your purchases using code SIDIOUS15 at checkout. Shop their fall collection, which is live as we speak. New colors and new styles for a new season. Hit tracksmith.com and use code SIDIOUS15 at checkout. Thanks to the support on Patreon. You guys are really coming through there. And a special welcome to Bridget Chamberlain for joining the Backers Club on there. If you enjoy what we're doing, support us over at patreon.com/sidiousmag. A quick breakdown of how you can think of your contribution. $4 a month on Patreon is like buying me or my producer a cup of coffee. $8 maybe gets us a salad for lunch, and that's being super generous if I'm talking New York City prices. Anything more than $8 a month, and you're basically my best friend. If you sign up, you'll get a shout out on the next episode of the podcast. You can also make a one-time donation by sending any dollar amount to Sidious Mag on Venmo. It can be because you enjoyed the conversation, or you want me to shout out a friend, teammate, coach, or family member who really loves the show. For this episode, a shout out to Britt Costa, who just broke 3 hours in the marathon in Philly. I'm actually super jealous. He ran 2:59.12, and it's a goal that he's been chasing down for more than a decade. That's how I feel right now. He's worked really hard to crush this goal, and his family is super proud of him, especially his boys Ben, Luke, and Bloomy. So keep up the awesome work, Britt. Consider Venmo as a virtual tip jar if you enjoy the show. So thanks to everyone who has donated and coming through with some tips. Lastly, another way you can show your support and love is by picking up a t-shirt, sweater, crew neck over at sidiousmag.com and hitting the merch tab. An update on the Molly Seidel merch. She and I teamed up on a t-shirt that says, "Well-behaved marathoners seldom make history." And all the proceeds go towards We Coach, which is an organization supporting female coaches. We sold almost 600 shirts and raised more than $4,500. Amazing. So friends, I've been blown away by the support that you guys have all shown with some 5-star reviews on Apple Podcasts. Keep those coming because we cracked the top 40 of all sports shows and we cracked the top 15 of all sports shows on Spotify. Crazy stuff. This really goes to show that track and field storytelling has a place among all these other great shows. Your ratings and reviews help it make it possible for future sponsors and new listeners to know what you all think of the show. And of course, thanks to everyone who has shared some of the most recent episodes on their Instagram stories or on Twitter. I do my best to reshare them anytime that someone tags Sidious Mag in them. We love to see it. My guest for today's episode is Coach Lori Hennis of NC State, just days after the Wolfpack women won the team's first ever NCAA cross-country title. And although very early on in this conversation, you'll be very quick to hear Coach Hennis point out they actually won the AIAW national title in 1979 and 1980 before the NCAA. And Coach knows a thing or two about her NC State history because as an athlete, she was an NCAA champion and a 6-time All-American for them, and then went on to have a very successful professional career that included representing the U.S. at the World Championships in Sweden back in 1995. The following year, she finished just 2 spots away from making the Olympic team, but by that point had already been a member of the NC State coaching staff for 4 years. Fast forward now, and it's been 16 years since she's been at the helm of the women's team. And in this conversation with me and my co-host, Mac Fleet, you'll hear more about how she's fostered and created such an awesome team and atmosphere, and a bit about her thoughts on the recent success of female coaches within the NCAA. Right after we got off the call with her, she was actually named the Southeast Regional Coach of the Year. And I'm sure that's not the last honor that's going to come from this remarkable year for her and the team. So as we've been doing lately with some of these other episodes, you can watch this one on YouTube and catch clips of the conversation. So be sure to subscribe to the City Smack YouTube channel for more cool content. Without further ado, here is Coach Lori Hennis of NC State. All right, now we welcome on Coach Hennis to the podcast, just fresh off a national championship. So first off, congratulations. And I'm curious, what have the last couple days been like in terms of just celebrating right on the course and then afterwards getting on a plane and heading back to campus? How what have the last couple days been like?
Yeah, they've been really cool. Hectic, obviously. Our administration was generous enough to let us charter, so it was kind of cool. We were able to get back on Saturday night, and so we have a big bell tower on NC State's campus, which they had lit red, and we actually had a police escort with the bus straight to the bell tower and had people there and got to go inside the bell tower, which is like a huge deal at NC State. But we're racing a lot of the women that ran in a 5K or 3K in Boston, so we're just back on the track today.
Wow, back to business already.
And then a big break after that, but yeah.
So if I read it correctly, I think afterwards, first national title for NC State since Jimmy V? Is that right?
Yeah, since 83.
Yeah. So what does that mean, I guess, like for you, to having been part of, you know, the NC State athletic department and culture for such a while, and he's such a legend outside of basketball, just across sports, like Jimmy V is a huge deal. So for you to kind of like, you know, restore that championship culture at NC State, I'm guessing it means a lot.
A ton. Yeah, I mean, Jimmy V was the AD when I got here, so he actually, on my recruiting visit, he sat down and ate lunch with me. And wow. He was the MC for like all of our banquets and everything. Like he knew everybody. That's how he was with the athletic department. Like he knew every coach, every high level athlete, all that stuff. So I think, you know, we talk a lot about family and stuff in our program. And I think NC State really embodies that. And, there were people before him, but that's who I knew as the AD. And so to be able to kind of bring that back is awesome. You know, we did win two AIW titles in women's cross. And I think, you know, a lot of people don't really know the history of it. Really, basically, was an NCAA championship. They just changed the name the next year after that. So when women's sports, when the NCAA kind of caught up. But, that kind of history of the program is when I came in as an athlete, we were ranked number one in the country. So and that's why I chose NC State, and to kind of bring this back to that level and to have, that us be an option for the people in high school and stuff that want to go in and win an NCAA title. I think means a lot to the people in this program and to this coaching staff for sure.
That's amazing. A lot of our friends that have gone to NC State have described it really as a close family. Mm-hmm. And everyone sort of stays in touch with each other after school. I would say it's one of the best sort of alum groups out there. Can you speak a little bit about like the culture of NC State? You went to school there. You've been coaching there for a while. There haven't been very many coaching changes there since the 70s. It's probably one of the most consistent programs in the U.S. Can you just speak about like sort of the culture of the athletic department and the school itself?
Sure. Coach Geiger, who's still the director of program here, was my coach. He was my husband's coach. He was in both of our houses on home visits in the 80s. Today at practice, for instance, some of the people, Emily Pritt ran her first run in like 6 months, and we were down there cheering for her. Megan Moy, Megan Manzi, Michael Mays, they were all like at the practice this morning because they happen to be in town and people come back here. So I think the athletes in the program really feel that too. Like, you know, like when we win a national title, there's so many people so excited about this, and so many of our alumni really still in touch with it. And I think it does, you know, it's kind of when they've had the same coaches that are still there, it just keeps people more tied to the program. And so, I just feel extremely fortunate to be able to have stayed in the same place as long as I have. I know that that's just not really an option for a lot of coaches, you know, at this level. And so I just feel really fortunate that we've been able to, my husband and I have been able to settle down here, stay here, raise our family, and stay in the same place. But, you know, we always say that NC State, you know, I think we have a really pretty campus, but it's not going to match, like, you know, Ivies or something like that. You know, we don't look like Hogwarts. And so, you know, we always say it's more about the people, not just in our program, but the university as a whole. So I think, like, our program really does embody that as well.
So we get that family feel from, like, the stories we hear from our friends who went there. And I'm curious, like, how do you get it across to, you know, the high schoolers who are looking at NC State? And, you know, you've been able to nail some pretty awesome recruiting classes in the last couple of years. So how do you sort of convey that to a high schooler, whereas, like, they're not thinking, you know, down the road, like, I'm gonna meet my husband on, you know, the NC State track and cross country team, because there's been so many of those couples over the years. But what is it that you kind of really try and hone in on to those recruits that you talk to?
You know, I think that, well, first of all, our whole staff is pretty much from here too, so that, like, you know, plays into it as we go through the recruiting process. But obviously results are important to us. You know, I mean, everyone says trust the process and all this, yet you do have to be process oriented, and we are. You know, results are important, but taking care of people as a person is important to us, and I hope that comes across in the recruiting process. I do think that the COVID, you know, kind of recruiting year in there was really tough for me personally, because it really is all about the visits and getting to know people, and we couldn't do a lot of that. And so I think probably fortunately in our position that the class before that was large, and so we weren't looking to make the next two classes, you know, super big and bring a bunch of people in. And so we were able to get back to having people on campus, and really, you know, you can build relationships on Zoom, but I mean, I'm kind of old school, and we really like to have people on campus and really spend, because every school is going to say we're family oriented, whatever, right? Like, that, who wouldn't say that? Like, everyone's going to say that. So that's why for us, the visits are the most important thing, and to people really feeling like they meet everybody on the roster, they hang out with everybody. It isn't like just meet with the coaches and we're trying to convince you of something. I think we do on visits, like, they spend a lot of time with the team, actually not a huge amount of time with the coaches at all, actually. Because I want people to come in that are going to be folded into, you know, what we're trying to do, and that, and are going to get along with everyone well and have the same kind of team goals.
So I saw all the reactions on social media from, you know, Erica Kemp, you know, Olivia Enright, Emily Pritt, as you mentioned. And so it's like, there were so many people a part of, you know, the NC State team over the years that really celebrated this victory. I'm always curious, you know, I asked Molly Seidel a couple of weeks ago what her phone was like blowing up after, you know, New York and the Olympics. But for you, I guess, you know, to have classes and classes of alums probably congratulating you and texting you constantly, what was that like, I guess, this past weekend when, you know, after the win, it felt like just so many people were invested in this and seeing it finally happen?
Yeah, it was awesome. And, you know, you're at the awards ceremony stuff for so long, I feel like I missed somebody. So if I did, I really apologize in answering. I'll tell you what happens, like, for me, like, I just feel like everybody was on the team together, because I've been here so long, it's running together. So, like, I can't remember if, like, well, I mean, I know Olivia and Erica were together, obviously, but then I'll be like, wait, was Joanna Thompson on the team with this person? And was Kenyatta with, you know, because, like, everyone's texting me, and I'll be like, oh, yeah, this person's here, and I can't remember, like, who was with who. But it really makes me feel good, too, that we have, like, you know, we had, before they, you know, disbanded, we had a good part of the New Jersey, New York track club, too. Kenyatta's back here, Megan's back here. And we have a lot of people that, you know, felt strongly enough about running at the next level to try to give it a go and run professionally. And it's really cool that we have all these alumni at all these different groups, and they're all, like, really still invested on the same day that we can do something like win a national title, where everyone's still connecting with each other from wherever they are.
Yeah, I was fortunate enough to watch it on ESPN with Kenyatta when we were in Boston over the weekend. So it was really fun just watching her just on the edge of the seat, just screaming at the TV. I have to, we've got to ask about Coach Geiger. Is he okay from the confetti pop? We have, I'm going to pop it up here.
The video here.
Is he okay? Also, I have another question. Did someone steal his flip-flops? Because he's wearing shoes. And is this going to be a new trend for him? You guys won and he's wearing regular sneakers.
oh, shoot, I didn't even realize that. I guess he's going to have to shoe up, we call it. Yeah, he's going to have to shoe up from now on, possibly. It was too warm. I don't know where the slides were. If you the still picture of that one, when you zoom in on everyone's face, like Nevada Marino's face is hilarious as well. She looks like she's at Disney World, I think. They could have warned us. But, yeah, he's fine.
It seemed cruel over there on the side. You just had no clue, yeah. And it was right next to him.
I want to go more into just that day and start really, I guess, before the race, because there's so many different coaching styles where it's like some coaches are they've got their any given Sunday moment where they've got a big speech prepared to pump up the team. And from what our sources and our friends who have been in the program said, that you're a little bit more calm and collected before the races and when you send off the team. So what was like the final sort of instructions and race plan that you kind of talked through with the team before, this big of a race?
I think we were just in an enviable position this year of like just all we had to do was the same thing we'd been doing all year and it would work out fine. And what I told them there too is like, if it didn't, like if we had a 20-second spread to Kelsey and we lost, then we got beat, So if we just did what we did all year, I think sometimes people go into like an NCAA cross championship and they want to do something like heroic, I'm going to go out harder. I'm going to do something different. And we were going out fairly aggressively all year. So we really didn't change anything. We've been on this course before in the past. In 2015, we had an ACC championship there. So I knew that we were going to have to handle being able to go out kind of aggressively. And so we practiced that in a lot of meets and really just tried to talk about consistent effort. Coach Geiger is in charge of the pre-race night before speech. He had Savannah Shaw reading out of a book and things like that. So he's in charge of that part of it for sure. I don't know. There were just so many things that last week that, the result looks really good. And there were just so many things that were a little crazy going into it. But Hannah Steelman, who we had sat out, woke up with, I guess it's a spider bite. It was crazy, like streaking. And so she's fine. But we had to, it was a little bit of a morning of, that was a bit stressful. She handled it well. Our trainer, who was actually at Notre Dame for years, he was the trainer when Molly and Anna and everyone ran for Notre Dame. He's just very calm. He's like, yeah, we're going to need antibiotics for that pretty quickly. He's like, I guess we can wait till the race is over. But
that's crazy. I'm curious, at the beginning of the year, I don't know how your goal setting process is, but obviously setting goals for college athletes is so important. Are you sort of a coach that lets the athletes set their own goals and then you guys sort of take ownership of that together? Or are you sort of a coach that will set the goals out for the team yourself? I've had both with Vin and Andy, and they both work for different people. What's your approach to that?
Very much so let the athletes do it first. And then then we talk through it. But they have actually, I think we kind of have a set of goals that doesn't change a whole lot. Like ACC is a great conference. We always want to be in a position to have an opportunity to win the conference championship. Hopefully we're deep enough and, have an opportunity to do that. We always want to be at nationals, and we've probably revised it in the last, 6 or 7 years with a chance on the podium, that kind of thing. But I also think that, and we try really hard to focus on process goals, and they did a good job of that this year, but it's really hard to finish second, return everybody, and not have the goal be to win. And I think that they were not afraid to really say that this year either in the, say that's the goal and then go back to focus on what do we really need to do to meet that goal and focus on that week to week. We had, some of them in their logs were writing like what their goal was for that week to make that week, what they need to do in that week to be better. And then the next week and the next week and that kind of thing. So both can work well and figuring out what works for each individual. I think like some of the one-on-one conversations are different. Some people want to stay completely away from the result goal, and that's fine. I think that works. And some people are just more focused on what, hey coach, I don't really know, what place do you think I can finish? Where should I be at this point? So I have different conversations with different athletes. I think, as the longer they're in the program, you just kind of get to know what makes them tick and which is better for which individual person. Because the team goal is the same. Everyone, we need to have everybody on the line ready to run well, but they might get there a little bit differently, you know, mentally or even, you know, volume wise or, you know, something like that in training. And so that's fine as long as people's, you know, if you're putting on the uniform on the same day with the same goal.
That's awesome. I love to hear that. And you talk about getting second last year, you come back and win this year. And I might be totally wrong here. And if I am, please just tell me I'm wrong. But it seems like head women's coaches right now are having a better, they're having better success at multiple years of success with women's teams, if that makes sense. You're having a better sustained, consistent sort of performance out of group instead of like a really good year and then you dip and all of a sudden like this team isn't making NCAAs that was like podium, you know, the year before. Obviously, there's the Lance Harders of the world, but you have coaches like yourself, Coach Powell, Coach Gina, Coach Taylor, that have had these programs that are extremely consistent. What do you think the importance is of women's coaches with women's teams, and what are your thoughts on sort of why that's happening?
I think it kind of filters down at the high school level. Almost people are, and as a parent of a, had a very good high school athlete, you know, a few years ago too, you hear this going on. I think people are realizing what girls in high school and then women at this level need to do to have longevity in the sport. And I mean, obviously male coaches can do that and can understand that and can, you know, but I think that there are just some conversations, particularly 18-year-old, 19-year-old women are more comfortable having with a female coach. I've had my high school coach, she was the matron of honor in my wedding. She's Ellie's godmother. So I had Coach Geiger here. So I've really had both ways. And I think obviously any of that can work and the education piece of it is huge. But I do think that more and more young women are thinking like, I want to do this long term. And I, you know, being around other people that understand that, and then it just kind of attracts, you know, people to that program, those programs as well. In the middle of this, you know, we finished 13th in 2018, and it was like the end of the world to the people in the program. And sometimes you got to remind like women at that level too, like it's hard to win. You know, we were eighth the year before that. And I remember walking back to the tent, and Ellie was on that team, Dom, devastated. They were devastated not be on the podium. And Bob Brayman from Florida State came up to them and he said, look, I've been doing this even longer than your coach. It's not easy to be top 10. You can't go home and just solve, you know, like you just, I think that we're getting better at keeping women, our women more even keel too. Like understanding like, this is hard to do. And, you know, it's hard not to finish an NCAA championship like this and be like, oh, who's bringing who back? And what's next year going to look like? And just, you know, tell them like, just enjoy it, just celebrate it, enjoy it. And I think that, we're getting better at that. But I do think that, you know, just all the information that's out there is helping high school girls, hopefully, and their parents understand, you know, let's not go crazy when you're 14, 15, 16. If these are your goals for later, let's try to save this and understanding. And again, this can be male or female coaches, but I think just going, we've been here for so long and done this, going for the short-term gains is just not the way to go. It's really, really tempting. Like, sure, somebody who was, you know, you can raise their mileage, you can have them do a lot more intensity, and you can get a lot more out of a freshman who was good that wasn't doing those things in high school, but we try really hard not to do that.
Yeah, so it sounds like you've been having more of these conversations, and it comes with like the success and the talent level of the athletes that you have now, that they want to continue doing this beyond college. So I guess like what are some of those conversations like when you do get an athlete like that, in terms of talking them through like what that next phase might look like? I know starting off as a professional runner, and I guess Matt could speak to this a little bit more, it's like you when you leave a college program, you have like all the amenities and all that, and sometimes unless there's a big contract waiting for you, it gets really difficult after college. And so it's not as pretty, the day-to-day is not as pretty and easy. How do you sort of, I guess, taper sort of those expectations while they might be caught up in the excitement of being part of a really successful team?
Well, luckily we have a lot of, you know, professional athletes running professionally that come back and hang out with them. And so it's so like like there's a pillbox outside my office for, you know, the people who have, whose iron is low, and they just can come in and it's right there. Like I'm yelling at my daughter, like, did you take your iron? You're at altitude, you know, like there's so, like you're saying, there's so many, so much that's different at the next level. But, we try to keep the training. Obviously we train hard, you know, the times are crazy in the NCAA now. People are doing things that, like, I think, like, would I even be good? You know, like, what, like it's just nuts. But we, just as the really good high school coaches do, we try to leave room, you know, to make that next step if people want to do that, if those are their goals. We have, you know, for some people it's not. Even some people who run at a really high level, like, I mean, as you know, Erica Kemp, like, didn't really decide to run professionally till probably the last, like, 3 months she was here and things were going really well. And she's like, oh, maybe I do have, maybe I will do this. So not, you know, not everyone goes in with those goals, but we still try to, I mean, I feel a great amount of, like, responsibility to all the athletes in the program. Certainly, like, you know, some of these athletes at a really high level in high school that we've signed, you feel like a responsibility to make sure that their career, you know, that you don't do anything crazy early and that they can get better each year. But I feel that responsibility to all the athletes in the program. And, you know, even if they're not going to run professionally under contract or whatever, I think running is something most people want to do for the rest of their lives. So, you know, we're trying to put people in a position that if they want to do it professionally, great. They still feel like they're excited to do that. And I that is one of the things I'm happiest about with our programs. I think a lot of our women do finish and are like, I love being a part of this. I think the hardest thing, even the pro teams, you know, it's nothing's like a college team. Mm-hmm. First of all, people take care of you. Like, yes, you can walk into the training room, get treatment anytime, all those things. But it's also like an NCAA championship in cross country. There's nothing like that. But like I ran for, you're not putting on the same uniform like you are, but this like trying to that whole something bigger than yourself, a goal bigger than your you know, something that the individual, like the motivations are different professionally. And we always tell people, like, if you're on scholarship here, we're not paying you to run. No one's paying you to run. We're offsetting the cost of your education. But at the next level, they are kind of paying you to run. And it's a different mindset. And, you know, you have to have different motivations for that than you do collegiately.
I definitely struggled with that professionally. I was a huge, huge team person. Loved relays, loved the pressure of having to score points for the team and everything. And honestly, part of my poor performance professionally was probably due to a lack of that, that team aspect. But I want to talk about coaching, Ellie. You coached her to an NCAA title last year, but you yourself being at NC State, like coaching your daughter to that level, what was the dynamic like? Because that can't be easy, of being a coach and a mom, and especially coaching someone at that level. What was that like?
It got much easier like that last year or two. She wasn't sure she even wanted to really run in college until like her senior year. I mean, I think she was always going to do it, but she wasn't sure she wanted to do it at a really high level. And so, seeing her like really, embrace that and want to like go after a national title was really cool. But, you know, we've had that same kind of, you know, feeling with other athletes, but when it is your own child, it is different. It's hard. It's hard not to be a little bit more nervous or whatever. But I don't know, like I would feel that way, I think, with any of the athletes in the program, like trying to win a national title, being in that position, trying to set them up for that. So, you know, she grew into a really good leader later on in her career, and that made it easier. She was very invested in the team doing well and vice versa. So but there is like, it was a little surreal, like, you know, you're sitting in the same stadium I won in, you know, 30 years later, like that, like, yeah, that's super cool. It was really fun, but it's also kind of nice right now. I didn't coach her in high school, would not have worked at all. She was not serious. It would have gone poorly. It's a perfect time to coach her. And now I think it's, I just think it's really, it's tough for me, at least with the, you know, the roster we have, and to be doing two different programs or working with a lot of, like, I will work with some post collegiates from our program if that's what they want. But I just think for me, when you're focused like in the middle of an NCAA cross country season, it's hard. Obviously she's with Mike Smith and he's doing it quite well. For me, I think it would just be hard to be able to give the attention to pros at that level and and the college athletes trying to win an NCAA title at the same time.
I love the Runner's World story that was done on the two of you. And like you said, kind of like the whole winning in the same stadium, like it's got its own like little like Disney movie aspects to it. And the line that I really liked was the first line in the article where it says, Lori Hennis practices gratitude daily. And as the head coach at NC State, she asked her athletes to give thanks to. So I'm curious, and this is perfectly timed right before Thanksgiving, after the season that you've had and these last couple of years building up to this moment, I guess, what are you most thankful for?
Being able to do this and the people that I'm surrounded by, for sure. In the huddle before that's kind of what I ended with too. Like, at the end of the day, like, you don't know going into a season like this if everything's going to work out. I'm like, we're here with an opportunity to be successful, you know, mostly pretty much healthy and with that opportunity. And like, you just don't know, even when, no matter who you return, and you just don't know when that's going to happen. We said it even at the regional meet, like, cause you could kind of feel it come building. And I think like our top five were really dialed in and running well. And I said, like, you just take the time to appreciate what you're doing right now. Like, these things there's no guarantee of it. And you know, all you can ask for is an opportunity. And so, you know, they really took advantage of that. And I'm thankful that, that these people I'm surrounded by and our staff is awesome. The team is awesome. And, you know, it's kind of a blended team this year too. We brought people in kind of late, which we hadn't done a whole lot of that. And so, it's just really great. Like the whole, like, Allie Hayes thing working out, like that, like it just felt like it was the kind of destiny, honestly. And she's like, this is where I want to be. And, you know, and for her, she's great. So her and Hannah coming in late in their careers. And, but this was a big goal for both of them, and to be able to help them reach that, and the people that we recruited out of high school, just really thankful for all of that.
That's awesome. What was more fulfilling for you, winning as an athlete, winning NCAAs, making a world team, being a competitor yourself on the track, or coaching an individual NCAA champion and a team champion? What's the most fulfilling thing for you? And can you separate those things? And do you get the same competitiveness with coaching that you did as an athlete? Is that sort of fire still there?
It's like asking her to pick her favorite kid.
I know.
Coaching, for sure. As opposed to the individual, as an athlete. Like, I was not one of those people, nor is Ellie, that like is in love with running. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm not like, oh, I want to get up and run 20 miles. Like, no, I don't. So that probably answered the second part too. The competitive part is always there. Like, I was raised, I'm from Northeast Ohio. Like, everything was about high school sports and youth sports. Like, I played everything. My father would never have let me win anything. Like, the very first race when I was young, he like ran me into a car to beat me. Like, everything, like, there was no like, let the kid win, whatever. So raised in that kind of environment, very competitive. So there's that, but you know, and you think as an athlete, like, this is a, you know, pinnacle of it, but absolutely coaching, and picking between coaching Ellie or the team title, that's hard. But right. I don't know. Those are like up there, but feeling it, you know, it's just so different. Cause you feel like you have control over it, but you don't really, like, once they go, like, you think, you know, what's going to happen, but you can't really control it. Where you're as an athlete, it's like not as nerve wracking. Cause you feel like you're controlling, you know, what you're doing. But I you know, maybe early on in my career, I wouldn't have said that, but now absolutely the coaching part.
So we've got some listener questions that were submitted to us. We put the call out on Instagram and we got some good ones. And this first one comes from Ellie, I think. Let's see if Matt can pull it up.
Oh, not that one.
Oh.
Hold on. Here we go. Yes.
Ask about the bet she made with her daughter. She has to get a matching wolf tattoo. So what's the story behind this?
I can't remember even how it started. Either she had to be more all-American more times, but COVID kind of messed with that. So then it was, or win a national title. So yeah, we're supposed to be getting one. I mean, she's in charge of making the appointment, which I don't know that she's made it. So when she does, I will. I didn't agree to any certain size though. So.
Do we know where the tattoo's going to be?
I think wrist. Yeah, I don't know.
Okay. All right, next one, Mac. What are some of the team activities you use to build chemistry and culture?
You know, I think they really do a lot of that. We do a team trip at the beginning of the year where there's, you know, lots of, we bring in a sports psych and there's lots of team building activities, but I think it's mostly like, it's not, they do their goal setting sessions themselves again, you know, away from the team, where they really try to be vulnerable with each other, talk about, what each person needs to do better and how the other people on the team can hold them accountable, those kind of things. But I think it's really more the day-to-day stuff. Like, after a lot of the long runs, it's like, where's brunch? And everybody goes together on the weekends. The dining hall that our athletes at NC State get, they get free dinner Sunday through Thursday, but then it's closed on Friday because so many of the teams are gone. And so they'll always, like, it's really around those kind of like meals on Friday and Saturday night, brunches, those type of things. They'll go to the beach. Even that stuff turns into competition because it's always like game night, or, you know, they were playing Scattergories and Catan and all those things at nationals. But the thing is, like, that's what they're used to doing every weekend. So I think it really keeps the nerves down too. Like, when you can go to NCAAs and do the same thing you're doing on a regular Friday night, you don't feel like it's over important, right? You're just, like we said, just being consistent, doing the same thing you usually do. So since they always spend that much time together and do those things, it's really helpful in a big meet situation that they're just kind of doing what they would normally do any other Friday night.
Love that. Next one up. What's your favorite place to run in the Triangle? Is it Umstead or the Tobacco Trail?
So personally, it would be the Tobacco Trail because I don't love running on hills. Actually, I usually run on a treadmill, which is just ridiculous. And when we have these beautiful running sites, I think the team is probably half and half. If you would ask, half of them would love Umstead. And for those people who don't know, like, Umstead is a state forest. It's really hilly. There's no flat part of Umstead, but it's beautiful. Really hilly. And then Tobacco Trail is a rails to trail that's, you know, 20 miles and like crushed gravel. And the problem with Tobacco is you can just get flying on that thing. So when we do use it for long runs, it's like, you know, we got to get someone in a bike and calm people down because you can get going a little too fast at Tobacco.
Yeah, I got a chance to run on the Tobacco Trail back a couple months ago, and it was, one, beautiful, but like you said, flat and just a lot of fun. You could get excited on, like, I think there's one way back that you start to roll a little bit downhill, and like, it was, it's just great. Like, definitely a favorite spot. What's the next one we got, Mac?
All right, yeah, we got three more of these.
How do you approach food, nutrition, weight as a coach? Now, this is, and I guess, like, I got a couple of these asked because, I mean, it was definitely part of the general, like, coaching conversation that has taken place over the past couple months with news stories and all that coming out about, you know, coaches and the different approaches to it. So I guess, like, what can you share about your personal approach to these subjects?
Personally, like, we really try to focus on fueling, like, appropriate fueling for what you're doing. And, you know, for some kids, like, wow, when you are training at this level, like, it requires a lot. and you're not home anymore, right? Like, you're eating in a dining hall, you're doing all these different things. And so we have three full-time nutritionists that really help me out a lot with that as well. But really, you know, the best thing in the world would be to just say, like, eat when you're hungry, stop when you're full, and make sure you're taking in a lot of good foods. But for, you know, some people, that's hard to figure out. And so obviously when that's the case, we work with that. But I mean, you know, you can all use the race car analogy, but which is, you know, impersonal, but I mean, you just have to fuel appropriately. And we try to take as much as you can, take the emotion out of that. And that also can be difficult for women. And we just try to really, like, if you're same way we would approach, like, sports, like, those kind of things. If your goal is to run at a high level, like, you have to do these things correctly. And one of them is nutrition. I think people tend to focus on nutrition or weight as the main part of that. Some people tend to get caught up in that, and that is just not true. You know, I would put sleep way above nutrition in terms of, like, what's the thing that could derail somebody's, like, college career. Like, you're not sleeping enough, you're going to get hurt. Same thing. If you're not eating enough, you're going to get hurt. You know, these things, like, we just try to talk to them about, you've got to have this consistency in all things. And nutrition is one of them. And so we, you know, we just talk about, we have the nutritionists will come in. We talk about, we have fueling stations now. Like, everything's so different than when I was in school too. So, like, we used to forget. I was bad about packing lunch or figuring out when I was gonna get that. Now you can, it's so easy. Like, okay, we want you to get something in 30 minutes. Within 30 minutes, walk down to the weight room and there's all the stuff in there that you could get. And so it's really like, it's easy too, because we're teaching it and we can just provide it now, which we couldn't do in those days. So it's, I think that's one of the things that has been helpful at the collegiate level. You know, you've got people telling the athletes the right thing to do and then being able to provide it and show that this is right. So, yeah, I don't know if that answers all of it, but we really, really focus on it as fueling, and we're not afraid. You have to have those tough conversations if there are people, female athletes in high school that have not done that correctly, or that are under fueling, then we take that time and we work on it and we make sure, that people do that, because you cannot, it is not, you will not have a long career if you can't manage that.
Love to hear that. Oh, we got one more here.
Yeah, there we go.
So we got two-parter. How do you keep your team working together with a constantly revolving group? And then tips for keeping a strong girls high school cross-country program competitive yet humble.
Yeah, the constantly revolving group is a new thing, because we just talked about bringing in, you know, Hannah 2 years ago and Allie and people that weren't necessarily here as, you know, 18 or 19 year olds. And so one of the things this is an argument Ellie and I have had for years. She thinks that we should name team captains and we don't. And I'll say that we've got this from a sports psych person we worked with years ago. We want to develop leadership in every person in the program. And I think that helps the team working together when you have different people. Like, we don't say, this was the captain, and then when that person's gone, what do you do? Because your captain's graduated, and then you pick it. And also, I think that when the coach says, this is the person everyone should listen to, that's not how it happens sometimes. You know, like, you've got to know what's going on in the locker room, and you've got to know, like, who the athletes are listening to. Like, you want them to listen to you, but there's certain people on the team that have this personality that get people to follow them. And so we try to work as coaches with you know, like, coaching leadership as well as coaching performance and those kind of things. And I think that really helps with the, when you're bringing new people in all the time, that this is how we do things, and everyone's going to have, like, different leadership styles. For instance, on our current team, like, I'm not going to get Kelsey Camille to have, like, a big rah, rah team meeting. It's not her thing. That's not her personality, but, like, she's one of the best leaders we have. It's just, you got to figure out if some people are better one-on-one, let them work on that and focus on that. Let people who are good at planning the big get-togethers and doing the big group rah-rahs, things like that. So we focus on developing everybody's leadership style, and I think that helps keep people working together. And we're in the recruiting process, we work, and I guess you can't do this in high school, so I get that. In the recruiting process, we work on people who the team goals are just as important.
Before you answer that second question, I absolutely love that answer, and for anyone that's listening or watching this, that is why the program is what it is. I know it's a lot of other things, but that is, in my opinion, that is such a healthy take on, like, team captains and team culture. I feel so strongly about that subject, probably stronger than I should, and I absolutely love to hear that.
I think everybody has to be valued, and everybody has to have a role, and it's really hard with the depth we have right now and some of the decisions on who's running and those kind of things, but we start with that, and hopefully that carries through, you know. And somebody like Sam Bush, I mean, like, her breakthrough this year, like, she is a little bit more like me or Ellie probably coming in. I don't know that she was like this, like, loved running, but she likes being competitive, she likes being good, and she's like watching her growth and the training she's been able to do, and she's just like, her determination to be all American and run at that level. And I think that the way we do that allows more people to have that kind of growth, because they don't feel like, I'm not the leader, these people are the captains. It's always hard, and the people running at a higher level, yeah, they get to go to different meets, there's some division, and we try really hard to not have that happen, but I think that I hope that that outlook does give everyone in the program the opportunity to feel like they can do that. But again, we can recruit that way. So I understand for a high school program, that's a little bit different. Competitive yet humble. Let's see. we do, you know, one of the things that I talk about a lot is like what we just talked about, the opportunity. You're never guaranteed of anything. So I think on the humility side, like just remembering to be grateful, to be in the moment. Like if you're in on a really strong high school program, like there's no guarantee of that the next year or two. And so, you know, just appreciating what you have. And in terms of like we really just talk about the competitiveness being the team goal, like working together, like finding your teammate and passing people from other schools together. We always talk about like the, you know, 4-point swing advantage instead of two, if you're bringing your teammate with you and passing two people and those kind of things. And so we focus on that in training. We really focus on working together. And that doesn't mean there's no, you know, people that like, oh, everyone, that doesn't mean people run every single workout and finish together all the time. There's a difference in the levels, sometimes even within the top group. So we don't insist on that for sure, but we insist on it being everybody's trying to bring each other along. It doesn't mean you do everything exactly the same. And I know some high school programs are different on that. And I understand both sides of it for sure. But at this level, we're trying to focus on like people can get there slightly different ways. And so what we talk about is you've got to trust your teammate that they're doing the right thing. If they're listening to what the coaches are telling them and someone's allowed, or can go a little bit faster or this group changes to stay, we talk about the trust factor in that everything we're doing is to try to get people on the line in the right mindset and fit enough to get done, to reach the team goals. And they've got to trust each other to do that. They're doing the right things to get there.
You can also keep them humble by just throwing them in a 3K or 5K like a week or so later. So I'm guessing that's the exciting next part of what the team has going on.
Who said today, they're like, yeah, that nothing like a little bit of speed work after cross country to throw a little humility back. I think it was Caitlin.
So Coach, we thank you for taking the time to do this. This is a lot of fun and wishing you even more congrats on the title. And we're excited to see some more success from the NC State program in the weeks and years to come, I guess.
Thanks. Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
The City of Smack podcast is a production of the City of Smack Podcast Network. It is produced and edited by Mike Zerzolo. Did you enjoy this episode enough to dish out a couple bucks? Support City of Smack by pledging any dollar amount over on patreon.com/cityofsmack to join our loyal legion of backers who keep this show going strong. If you're on your phone right now, you can also open up the Venmo app and hit us with a one-time donation to @cityofsmack. We've also got merch over on cityofsmack.com. Any way you can show your support goes a long way. Thanks for listening. I've been your host, Chris Chavez, wishing you some happy and healthy running. Legs are feeling good. See you next time.